and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Brian Venwa. In this week's recap, state law enforcement raided the Alaska Groundfish Data Bank.
Basically, what is being investigated, they are saying is effectively this sort of very thing that popped up during the course of my reporting, which is sort of what is happening to the bycatch, and is it being essentially profited from by the processors?
That's coming up.
If you or someone you know is having thoughts of suicide or experiencing a mental health or substance use crisis, 988 provides connection to free, confidential support. There is hope. The Lifeline works. For 24/7 confidential support, just call, text, or chat 988. This message is brought to you by the Kodiak Area Native Association.
But first, the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce recognized outstanding local businesses for their contributions to the community with its annual awards in early November. I was at the dinner and have this report. Guests filled the Afognak Center on Kodiak's Near Island, many of whom dressed for a theme based on the board game and movie Clue. They paced around, playing a large-scale version of the game, trying to solve a murder mystery for a chance at prizes like gift cards and a fishing charter. But the main part of the night was the awards, starting with the Chamber's Member of the Year, Mattson. The shipping company was recognized for helping bring inflatable rides to Crabfest, supporting community cleanup days, and donating gifts and money to the Chamber of Commerce and some of its members. Bethany Ford, the company's office manager, gave a short speech.
Kodiak is our home, and our work with the people in this room is among our most rewarding community partnerships.
The Kodiak Area Native Association was another big business that was recognized and took home the Cornerstone Award for running the Kodiak Marketplace, an indoor mall. Emily Stewart on the Chamber's board called it a major step to improve Kodiak's downtown.
Transforming it from a once-decaying downtown into a beautiful, growing, and thriving space, supporting and encouraging small businesses, commerce, tourism, and event center hub for the entire community.
One of the businesses in that building won an award too. The Barefoot Bakery was named the Business of the Year. Crystal Burnside, the owner, says it all started with a few loaves at home.
We started at my kitchen table as I was teaching my kids to bake and baking bread and other goodies.
Other honorees included Volunteer of the Year Steve Paulson for his work with Island Trails Network. Service Organization of the Year went to Special Finds, and the Customer Service Award went to Kodiak Hana. Next Step Dance Studio was also given the President's Award this year for teaching kids discipline, determination, teamwork, and self-confidence. Mary Beth Lowen accepted it on the studio's behalf.
So thank you for believing in what we do, for letting us be a part of your children's stories, and for supporting a dream that started right here in Kodiak. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be doing this every day.
All of the recipients received metal plaques. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venwa. And the roughly 200 residents of Old Harbor on the southeast end of Kodiak Island have running water again after going days without it in early November. City officials say the power to the well pumps and subsequently the water pressure was cut in half, but they don't really know why. Glenn Clough is the vice mayor in Old Harbor. He says around November 1st, the water treatment plant operator discovered the community's water tank was getting low. Not enough water was being pumped in from the local lagoon.
At first, we thought possibly our pumps had issues, so we changed a couple of pumps. But that was not increasing the water flow. So it wasn't until we finally contacted one of our techs he had us go back and look at a few things, and we realized that we were not getting the power to the pumps that we should have been.
Close referring to the amount of electricity going to the water pumps that allow them to draw in between 70 and 80 gallons of water per minute until the tank is filled. So the city shut off the community's water service for 3 days to troubleshoot with support from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. Close to the group found that something happened to the sensors within the water tank and reduced the pump's output. He said he still doesn't know if it was a power fluctuation or what the cause was. Also compounding the problem was a huge run of pink salmon that returned to the Old Harbor Lagoon to spawn this season. Hundreds of dead humpies piled up by the water pump house, according to a post on social media from the city. The state of Alaska said in its boil water notice for Old Harbor that fish waste likely clogged up the water line going into the water treatment plant, which caused the pumps to overheat and water pressure to drop. Close as the high returns of pink salmon locally certainly didn't help the community's water woes.
The other thing that contributed to that was we didn't have any big rains, you know, and usually what happens is when we get those big rains, it helps to clear out a lot of our system. But when you don't get that, then the salmon go up, they spawn just like they do in every other river system, and eventually, if you can't get the water to move and get that stuff flushed out, then you're going to end up with sediment.
Regardless, Close says it was a real community effort to make sure each household had enough water from one of the local creeks for drinking water and to flush their toilets while the main water supply was shut off. According to the Ulutic tribe of Old Harbor, each household was given a 32-gallon trash can with filter lids to keep out debris, which could hold stream water that could then be boiled and used as needed. The local schools also closed for a few days while the community water was shut off, but Close says they plan to have makeup days for the lost class time later in the spring. The city has since restored water to the community. And the state of Alaska is exploring the idea of creating a new agriculture cooperative for farmers and ranchers around the state. As KMXT's Davis Hovey reports, some in Kodiak question if a cooperative could address the underlying challenges for farming and ranching in Alaska.
Through an online survey targeting food producers, the governor's office and the State Division of Agriculture is exploring if a farmer and rancher-owned cooperative could help strengthen Alaska's agriculture industry. On top of the survey page, the state asks, should Alaska expand cooperative opportunities for agriculture?
Absolutely. I think cooperatives are fundamentally, they're more democratic.
Ian Zacher, along with his wife and two young sons, run a farm on Kodiak Island called Ferma Bear Dawn.
You elect your boards, you elect your members. People have more say in what is being produced, right?
Zacher supports the co-op concept, but he's skeptical that it could address the underlying issues that plague Alaska's agricultural industry, such as a lack of infrastructure and high shipping costs.
There's many different forms of cooperatives, and they all have their pros and cons. But it's not going to change the fact that it costs about 40 to 50% more, in some cases up to 100% more to get things up here.
The intro text to the state survey suggests that a co-op could help producers cut costs through bulk purchasing, shared marketing, and transportation. It also says that if enough farmers and ranchers fill it out, then the governor's office will support a feasibility study to explore next steps with up to $50,000. Governor Mike Dunleavy's office did not make anyone available for an interview because of scheduling conflicts with the Alaska Agriculture Conference and Grazing Land Symposium in Anchorage, but a spokesperson did answer questions via email, though not a question about what enough interest means. The spokesperson said the state's involvement is only in facilitating the scoping of the co-op and that improving food security continues to be one of the governor's top priorities. Michelle Pages, the president of the Kodiak chapter of the Alaska Farm Bureau, says cattle ranchers and vegetable farmers alike face exorbitant shipping costs.
Shipping in all the seeds, the soil, the hoop houses. I've been wanting a hoop house on my farm, and it's been a challenge just to figure out how to ship it here. We got one quote that was like $4,500 from Kenai.
That's $4,500 just to cover shipping. Pages is also a Kodiak farmer with dozens of chickens, but like many on the island, it's not her full-time job.
I believe there needs to be more farmers so that we don't put so much stress on a couple of farms. And with more farmers, there's more food security in that. We're building a stronger base.
There are roughly 1,200 farms in Alaska, according to the latest federal census of agriculture, and their needs are varied. About 500 operate on 9 acres or less. The Kodiak Island Archipelago alone has small-scale family vegetable farms, cattle ranches, a goat dairy, hydroponic operations, and kelp farms. Zacher, the vegetable farmer, says he's concerned that a co-op will not be able to meet those unique needs.
You know, one of those concerns is, like, how are these cooperatives going to be run and, like, how are they going to be assembled?
The governor's spokesperson says that would all be up to the co-op members, and the agricultural cooperative would not be a subdivision of the government. The 12-question survey was developed by the governor's Office of Food Security, the Division of Agriculture, and the Alaska Cooperative Development Center at the University of Alaska Anchorage. It's open through the end of the month. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
And the summer's salmon season was the 12th largest harvest in the last 40 years, but it was also the 13th lowest in value when accounting for inflation. That's according to preliminary numbers from the state. Statewide, fishermen harvested a total of nearly 195 million salmon across species, roughly valued at over $500 million. That's according to preliminary data from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. It's over 90 million more fish than last year, according to the department, but that's partly because pink salmon generally have larger runs during odd-numbered years. In the last strong pink salmon run year, fishermen harvested around 230 million salmon across species. The Kodiak region was the only area with a higher pink salmon harvest this year than in 2023, according to Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute data. Across all species, Prince William Sound, Bristol Bay, and Kodiak harvested the most fish in that order. Combined, they make up over half of the total statewide harvest. But by value, Bristol Bay fishermen had the most valuable catch by far, estimated to be worth around $215 million. Fishermen there primarily harvest sockeye, and base prices for that species are often higher than for pinks, which is more of a high-volume fishery. Pinks made up over half of the salmon catch statewide. Southeast fishermen were a distant second. Harvest there was worth about $104 million. Large chum salmon run and a premium price for Chinook compared to most other regions drove up the Southeast dollar value totals. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game usually shares its salmon forecasts for the upcoming season in late spring. And our last story for today, Alaska state troopers seized all electronics from the Alaska Groundfish Databank in Kodiak, including those of Julie Bonney, the executive director of the member-based organization. According to reporting from the Northern Journal, wildlife troopers confirmed they're investigating allegations that multiple seafood processors had been illegally profiting from salmon and halibut bycatch. Bonney has not been arrested, and no charges have been filed against her or any seafood processors in Kodiak. KMXT's Davis Hovey spoke with Nat Herz from the Northern Journal about what seems to be at the heart of the investigation.
Thanks, Nat, for joining me. I would love to just break down what you know about this investigation so far, and why did troopers raid the Alaska Groundfish Databank?
Yeah, I don't think it's a secret. And in fact, you know, this was interesting because your listeners might remember, I think about a year ago, there was a big story that sort of broke about like kind of this one boat that caught a bunch of king salmon as bycatch, and that the Central Gulf pollock trawl fishery had to be closed as a result. And I wrote a little story about that in this National Marine Fisheries Service, the federal managers of that fishery. An official was like, yeah, you know, no one made any money off this. It got sent to the meal plant, the bycatch did. And I just sort of dutifully put that in my story because usually you can trust the stuff you get from federal managers. But then I heard from a source in the fishing industry, no, you can't send your bycatch to the meal plant because there's very strict regulations barring the bycatch from quote unquote entering commerce. You know, through the interviews that I was able to do and through some of the investigative documents that I was able to get a hold of and statements that the troopers made, basically what is being investigated, they are saying is effectively this sort of very thing that popped up during the course of my reporting, which is sort of what is happening to the bycatch and is it being essentially profited from by the processors. So the trawlers are not making any money like delivering this fish that they're not targeting, whether it's halibut or salmon. It's called prohibited species catch and they're not allowed to profit from it, but then they hand it over with the rest of their catch to the processors, and do the processors, they can either, you know, they've got options, they can send it back out to sea on the trawl vessels, which is sort of a pain for everyone because you have to put this like old smelly fish in totes and go dump it out past the 3 mile limit, or you can just send it, you know, down the road to the meal plant, which, you know, the contention is effectively this isn't a lot of money. No one's really making money off of it. And then it's much easier to just sort of deal with and make it go away. But the question here is like, is that legal? There are some pretty different opinions, I think, about, you know, advice that sounds like it may have been given or authorizations that may have been given in the past by federal regulators, and whether that sort of changed in the past few months about whether this bycatch fish could go to the meal plant. But that basically is what feels like it is pretty clearly is sort of being investigated here.
You know, as you said before, the Alaska Groundfish Databank represents, you know, dozens of trawlers, mainly most of them are primarily located here in Kodiak, and most are locally owned boats. But what has the Groundfish Databank said about this investigation, and what's their reaction to having their data seized?
It does look like the members of the Groundfish Databank are, or at least have been traditionally, both trawl businesses and processing businesses that are handling the pollock that's caught. I mean, they sort of, from a legal perspective, like, you know, they're being investigated in a what seems like a major criminal investigation by the troopers. And so I think they, you know, Julie Bonney, when I talked to her, she declined to comment, but then they also sent a sort of message to members saying, like, look, this is a longstanding practice. I believe they said this is a longstanding practice. Julie said at the council meeting that this was a longstanding practice and that they were really disappointed at the way law enforcement handled this, and that, you know, they have nothing to hide. They feel like what they've been doing in the past was actually justified by, you know, managers and regulators having signed off on this sort of legal interpretation that you know, turning bycatch into meal was acceptable under the regulations and the law. And so they're like, you know, look, you guys need anything from us, we'll share it with you. You didn't have to come in here sort of guns symbolically blazing and taking all our electronics. And the, you know, communication to members essentially was saying, like, you know, we've had to, like, tap into our systems remotely so that we can do these, like, essential functions, like report our catches, report our bycatches, things like that.
And although, you know, Alaska State Troopers say the investigation is focused on seafood processors, at least based on, you know, your reporting, it seems that you've already talked to others, though, who are pointing fingers at the trawl boats themselves. Why does it seem that trawl boats, I guess, are being implicated here?
You know, it feels like probably more of a, like, technical legal question, but then obviously, you know, anyone who's listening to this kind of a story on KMXT, I think, knows that, like, this issue of trawl bycatch and any issue of trawl bycatch over the past, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years has just become incredibly politicized, emotionally charged, and just sort of there's this kind of new level of scrutiny and criticism that's being brought to bear on the trawlers, I think, because of the amount of, like, waste that comes from that fishery. And there's just been this sort of increasing calls for, you know, sort of restrictions and even shutting the trawl fisheries down. And so I think there were folks who saw, look, law enforcement seems to be kind of coming down on the trawlers in some way, somehow. And so this is just another kind of data point that this is an industry that is involved in really bad stuff. And so my kind of phone and email lit up from messages and tips I was getting about this, because I think people felt like it really tied in with the other things that, you know, they've been observing and criticizing about the trawl industry. I think it's up to your listeners and my readers and the public to kind of look at the information and decide, like, you know, how much all this stuff kind of ties together or doesn't.
And again, that was KMXT's Davis Hovey speaking with Nat Herz with the Northern Journal. The full story is available online at northernjournal.com and republished on KMXT's website as well.
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at kodiakhealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
And if you enjoy this podcast, make sure to follow us on the KMXT app. It's free to download and features all of our local news and programming, including every episode of The Weekly Wrap. That's about it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm your host, Brian Benoit. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.